Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Fred Grandy and Frank Gaffney doing the hosting duties today as we usher you around the battle space in the war of the free world. But first, obviously, a lot of buzz, a lot of chatter about the president's speech to the UN yesterday, in which he really called for greater tolerance, plurality, and understanding. Ironically, while he was speaking to the assembled leaders of the world, our next guest was being threatened. She is Cynthia Farahat. You know her. She is our senior fellow, an expat from Egypt who has been following the events in Egypt. And Cynthia, I just want you to tell us now what happened to you yesterday when it became obvious that Coptic Solidarity, the group that you work with, was planning a demonstration in front of the UN when the new president, Mohamed Morsi, speaks in front of the General Assembly.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Grandy. Actually, what happened is what they do best. After just a few minutes after Coptic Solidarity released a press release where they stated that there is going to be protest against President Morsi, the alleged president of Egypt, against his policies and against his support for terrorism and jihad in Egypt, I got a phone call from someone who threatened genocide and mass murder of Christians in Egypt if we go on with the protest. And I am not the only person that received this threat. The Coptic Church in Egypt and Coptic churches in the United States also received similar threats that there were going to be murder of Christians in Egypt if we go on with this protest. These are the people that are receiving U.S. aid, and these are the people that President Obama has been supporting and funding and saying that they are the moderate force.
Well, now, obviously, this was an anonymous call. The guy didn't identify himself, but do you have any sense of where he might be coming from? Would he be part of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, in America, any organization other than the Muslim Brotherhood he might be working with? What's your best guess as to where this guy was calling from?
Since this was a threat of terrorism, I talked to the FBI, and the phone call was not from the United States. It was from Egypt. But obviously the person is affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood, given that he was defending them and by saying that they're going to kill if we protest against them. So obviously, whether he's from state security or the Muslim Brotherhood, he is clearly an Islamist. And this is, and also the son of President Mohamed Morsi himself often threatened protesters. Last August, when there was a protest on the 24th, actually what ruined the protest, mm-hmm. is that the son of Mohamed Morsi said that they're going to kill protesters. He openly said it. Well, and by the way, he recently said that he endorses President Obama. So,
well, all right. So I guess the irony here is that while more than a few Muslim leaders, President Morsi among them, are calling for anti-hate speech and anti-blasphemy laws courtesy of the UN, and of course the instigator of all of these conversations is supposedly this video that nobody has seen. At the same time they're preaching this, what they're practicing is open hostility and violence against a religious minority in Egypt. Have I got that about right?
That's exactly right. And not just against the religious minorities in Egypt and the liberal and secularist Muslims that are terrified I'm still getting phone calls from liberal and secular Muslims telling me that they are that they're terrified. But also, it's against Americans. The attack on the embassy in Cairo, it was absolutely organized, and it happened upon consent of the government. Because a month before the attack, the government withdrew all security from in front of the U.S. embassy.
Well, my understanding is that the embassy, the guards of the embassy, are not even allowed to have live ammunition in their weapons.
They used to have live ammunition and weapons, and no one could access the neighborhood where the U.S. embassy was, where the U.S. embassy is, without a credible reason and without showing their identification and documentation.
So what you're saying right now is all of those security precautions have been relaxed prior to the attack on the embassy.
They've been non-existent.
Wow. In terms of President Morsi's tenure now and what he is signaling in his administration, what kind of predictions can you make for the lives of Coptic Christians in Egypt and, for that matter, their relatives in the United States?
Unfortunately, Mr. Gandhi, that also depends on what happens in the elections, in the U.S. elections. As long as the current administration is going to continue with these policies, the message it's sending to these savages in these governments is you can continue killing and you can continue oppression and torture, and the inquisitions that they're having for Christians for posting any comment on Facebook, you can do that, and America is here to reward you, and every time you do something like that, we're going to give you more money. So as long as they're rewarded for their terrorism, it's going to continue, and it's going to get so much worse.
I was just going to say, all of the rhetorical niceties that Morsi has made about including cops in his administration and women are nothing more than tokens to kind of throw us off the scent of what appears to be a very repressive Islamist regime in the making.
Yes, they're the Coptic tokens. That's what they are. And if he would be able to do that, that's what they would be. It's sham. It's offensive. It just adds insult to injury.
Now, the last time that we talked about Morsi was just about the time he had pretty much trumped the military in terms of wresting power back from the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, which had tried to diminish the powers of the presidency. Can you tell us what the relationship right now is between the Morsi government and the military? Is he supremely in control now, or does the military still have some leverage?
Right now, what he's doing is, since he got rid of the old military guard, he's now replacing them with the people that are downright members in the Muslim Brotherhood, or even allies or who are sympathetic. So he is changing and neutralizing the leadership inside the military. Although there are some forces of dissent inside the military against the Brotherhood and against the religious state, but they're extremely weak and they have no leverage and no support nationally or internationally. Maybe nationally a little bit, but no international leverage whatsoever. So the military right now, the leadership is changing to a Muslim Brotherhood leadership.
All right. And also, I don't know if you know much more about this than we do, but of course Morsi has made some gestures and some statements about arguing for the release of the blind sheikh, Omar Abdel Rahman, who, as you know, is in a prison in North Carolina for his involvement, not just in the 1993 bombing, but also planning the 9/11 bombs. Do you believe, from what you hear from your contacts and colleagues in Egypt, that the Morsi government will press for Rahman's release, or at least his return to Egypt?
Actually, even before Morsi's death, the Supreme Council of Armed Forces, since last March, they have been pressing for the same thing. And also, they have released, they have allowed 3,000 jihadists. Last March in 2011, they allowed 3,000 jihadists to enter the country. Morsi is following the same footsteps of SCAF, where he is releasing terrorists, convicted murderers from prison, and he's imprisoning Copts and Muslim liberals.
Well, we've only got a couple of seconds left, and I just to drill down finally on this point, how important for the future of Morsi's credibility as president of Egypt is actually getting the blind sheikh back in Egypt? Does he absolutely need to do this? Is this something that Egyptians are relying on him to do?
Not at all. Egyptians, no, not at all. On the contrary, he doesn't care for credibility. It's a thugocracy. He does not answer to the people. He does not seek to be popular because he knows that he has the weapons and he has the military backing him up. So he doesn't answer to the people. He's working for the Muslim Brotherhood's best interest, which is to elevate the cause of jihad. And Omar Abdulrahman would certainly do that.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, Cynthia, but unfortunately, and of course we've talked about this a time or two, but the more you come on this program and talk about this, it looks as though America is succeeding in using a democratic process to elect and empower a dictator. Cynthia, we're going to have to leave it there. Frank will be right back right after these words. Thanks.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the craving for sweets. I totally lost the craving for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Michael Smith. He is a counterterrorism advisor to members of the United States Congress, a contributing expert to its Congressional Anti-Terrorism Caucus, and the co-founder of Cronus Advisory, LLC. You have seen him at Fox and doubtless read his analyses in various places, including at Wikistrat, a geopolitical analysis firm where he serves as a senior analyst. And Michael, you've written a very important piece, it seems to me, recently concerning the extent to which Obama has, as you put it, quote, helped Egypt open a new headquarters for global jihad, unquote. Tell us the thesis of this piece at foxnews.com and, you know, what you want people to take away from it.
Frank, it's great to be with you and your listeners again. The piece that was published this week, late last week on foxnews.com, focuses heavily on what the Obama administration really is not doing in advancing what I would liken as a de facto policy of inaction in the face of the rise of radical Islam. A lot's been said of Egyptian leaders' demands that the U.S. free the blind sheikh, along with several other terrorists who we currently have detained at Gitmo. But what's not really being spoken about at length in the press, and perhaps should be and may soon be, is the fact that the leadership in Egypt, vis-a-vis, I would assert, the Obama administration's failure to challenge them on this, is accommodating the releases from prison, the returns to Egypt, of a number of high-profile terror leaders, figures from the Islamic or the Egyptian Islamic Jihad, which was previously led by Ayman al-Zawahiri before he merged it with al-Qaeda in the build-up to the 9/11 attacks, along with very influential figures from the Islamic group itself, also known as Jamia al-Islamiyya, which was at one time led by the blind sheikh, who, of course, was jailed by the U.S. for his involvement in the 1993 attack on the World Trade Center. He's also known to have been involved in fundraising work that supported members of al-Qaeda while he was in the U.S. prior to the 1993 attack on the World Trade Center. So I think that what I wanted to present with that op-ed was the problem that we can now ascribe to the Obama administration's, again, policy of inaction in the face of the rise of radical Islam. I believe that what you see now is not only a sense of entitlement among lower-income Americans due to the administration's policies, but also a sense of entitlement among a lot of radical Islamist leaders in the world today, and much of that would probably be a manifestation of the Obama administration's willingness to suggest to the world it might be acceptable for the Taliban to have presented demands months ago for the release of other terrorists held by the U.S.
Mm. One of the other examples of the folly of letting these folks out, these inveterate jihadists, is one you've been tracking involving an individual believed to have been associated with the murderous attack on four Americans in our consulate in Benghazi, Libya, on September 11th, a chap by the name of, or at least one of his names, is Sufyan bin Kumu. Tell us what we know about him and how, if you agree, this further example argues against such a policy of accommodation to the demands for the release of these characters.
Well, I could tell you a lot about Sufyan bin Kumu, but I think that analysts at Guantanamo, you know, surmised the situation with bin Kumu's free operation in the world quite succinctly when they described him as a medium to high risk threat to U.S. interests. He was, of course, transferred to Libya with the explicit understanding that the Gaddafi regime would not release him. He was transferred to Libya by the Bush administration. He was later, in mid-2010, released by the Gaddafi regime alongside numerous other well-known terrorists, many of whom have been affiliated with al-Qaeda, like bin Kumu. And the Obama administration, again, responded with a policy of inaction. Yes, it's regrettable that he was transferred back to Libya by the Bush administration, but if you want to hold somebody responsible for the failure to act on the opportunity to address his release, it's ultimately going to be Barack Obama's administration that has failed to deliver justice to these people again. Libya was, of course, a key purveyor or provider, if you will, of jihadis who were engaged in the insurgency against Americans and our allies in Iraq. Counterterrorism experts surely expressed to the administration, just as I expressed to members of Congress, that it was incumbent upon the White House to examine whether or not people like bin Kumu should have been captured, recaptured, or killed during the Libyan Revolution. I think that the transitional government there and now the newly elected government surely would not have taken issue if the United States wanted to do these things. I think that that's quite quite obvious in the context of the fact that these jihadis were not given formal roles in the military apparatus that the transitional government had created. And we certainly had the means to go in there and address the free operation of terrorists like Ben Kumu months, if not even a year, before the September 11, 2012 attack in Benghazi, or attacks, I should say, in Benghazi, that led to the death of a U.S. ambassador.
Yeah. We're speaking again with Michael Smith. He is a principal in Kronos Advisory, LLC, a frequent contributor to our program here at Secure Freedom Radio and to Fox News and Fox.com. Michael, let me ask you this. We are also being told, and it probably is a topic of conversation as we speak with Mohamed Morsi in the United States, meeting with Hillary Clinton and perhaps others, that the administration, the Obama administration, is actively considering the president of Egypt's demand that we release arguably one of the most dangerous of these individuals, the blind sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, who tried to take down the World Trade Centers the first time around back in 1993, and who has been credited by, among others, Osama bin Laden with issuing the fatwa, the clerical ruling that justified the attack on it that successfully destroyed the World Trade Center in 2001. What are your thoughts, especially against the backdrop of what you've just been describing in terms of the recidivism, I guess is the technical term for it, these guys returning to the battlefield, the implications of releasing a fellow of the blind sheikh's stature and capabilities?
Well, let me start by saying that I don't think recidivism really would come into play in the case of the blind sheikh, because I've yet to see anything that indicates he's perhaps been, as you might put it, de-radicalized while in prison.
Right.
I've certainly heard reports that indicate he's, if anything, been very heavily engaged in trying to promote radical Islam while in prison to whatever extent he can. Let me also say that I am, at this point, proud not to have relations with anyone who is in President Obama's inner circle. So I really couldn't tell you about the truth as to whether or not the president is honestly considering releasing somebody like the blind sheikh. Meanwhile, I do think that we're sending a dangerous signal to the world when our president doesn't respond to that demand by sending a message to the leadership in Egypt, sending a message to the leadership of the Taliban when they've issued similar demands. But that's just not acceptable. It's not even something that we're willing to put on the table as a consideration.
Yeah, I'm afraid that it's being interpreted by them as evidence that we will, in fact, consider this. And we certainly know that some of these detainees are being discussed with the Taliban for release, and I suspect the blind sheikh is as well. We know of Hani Nour el-Din, one of his subordinates who was brought into the United States, as you know, on a visa back in June for the purposes of these kinds of discussions, Michael Smith. So I suspect this is one of these things we're going to have to watch this space closely. We'll look forward to doing it with you. Thank you for your insights and the work you're doing at Kronos Advisory, LLC. We'll talk with you again very soon.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. At the UN yesterday, President Obama declared that, quote, the future must not belong to those who slander the Prophet of Islam, unquote. If that sounds ominously familiar, it should be. It's basically the position of the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and other Islamists who are waging jihad against us. Such enemies see President Obama's insistence that we not offend them, including by speaking the truth about the totalitarian doctrine they call Sharia, and seek to impose on the rest of us, as evidence of our submission. Thus, by trying to ensure that no one slanders Muhammad or otherwise offends Muslims, we are simply inviting the jihadists to become more aggressively violent towards us. That's an affront to our constitutional right to free expression and a peril to our national security. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedomradio.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Fred Grandy filling in for Frank Gaffney. And I can't think of a better person to talk us through what President Obama said to the UN yesterday and perhaps what he did not say. I couldn't be talking about anybody other than Diana West, syndicated columnist. You can find her at townhall.com. You can also read her book, Death of a Grown-Up. But what I recommend is you listen to her right now. Diana, obviously, you paid attention to what the president said yesterday. Did you find his speech to be more stately or more stealthy?
Well, I found it neither stately nor stealthy. I think he was very open in what he was trying to get across. And I'll tell you, I'm still mulling this speech. I'm actually going to be writing this week's column about it. I keep coming back to the statement that I have not read in news reports in the New York Times, the LA Times, the Washington Times, the Washington Post, I have not seen on Fox News as reported, and I refer to the statement, the future must not belong to those who slander the Prophet of Islam. This is extraordinary. Now, I will, just to be clear, I've seen it in the transcript. I've seen it in the transcript as posted online at a couple of those organizations I just mentioned, but not in any of the reporting. This statement is not entering the discussion, and I find that staggering, and that's the reason I don't find it stealthy. This is a declaration that the President of the United States is saying the future must not belong to people who criticize Islam, who oppose its law, who want to discuss it in factual, rational terms. And I mean, I think that it's Stop the Press's news when the President of the United States makes such a statement, and yet we are at the point now where we will not slander the Prophet of Islam, that we won't even talk about
it. Well, more to the point, what he did not mention was any kind of endorsement or hopefully perhaps opposition to Resolution 1618, which, as you know, is the UN resolution currently coursing through the General Assembly that would essentially try to criminalize.
This is an endorsement. Yes.
This is
an endorsement of that very resolution.
And evidently, a lot of Muslim leaders, principally the leader of Pakistan and the leader of Indonesia yesterday, and I assume Morsi in today's speech, will essentially be pushing for the same thing. Now, is that a way of saying to us that the president is squarely behind an international attempt to codify blasphemy laws that could be binding in the U.S.?
Yes, I don't know how they can be binding in the U.S., but it is certainly his declaration of support for that very notion. And I think, again, we go back to Hillary Clinton's discussion of the mechanism to enforce such a law, mm-hmm. which is good old-fashioned shaming and peer pressure. Again, this becomes a campaign to persuade Americans not to discuss Islam, not to criticize the Prophet of Islam, not to actually take exception to its laws and its repression and its history, etc. So I think that it becomes more of a PR campaign on Americans, which we're very susceptible to. I mean, as you well know, Fred, we have not been discussing and engaging in this subject across our political spectrum, our media spectrum, at all for 10 years at least. So we are actually quite ripe for this very codification at the international level, even if we simply adopt it in a more de facto way, if we simply understand that we are behaving in accord with world opinion or something like that, that we're just going along to be good guys and not be mean. And the whole thing is that this is the utter undermining of the basis of our liberty,
but it's
atrocious.
But you know, as somebody who writes about this regularly, and at least in my view, doesn't have a large enough megaphone to call this question. What bothers me the most about this is the hypocrisy. While the president is talking about greater tolerance and. At least in his brief defense, he also said in this speech, the future must not belong to those who target Coptic Christians in Egypt. Well, Coptic Christians are being targeted in Egypt, mm-hmm. and the president of Iran is up saying, we've got to get rid of the state of Israel. Now, if that isn't hate speech, if that isn't blasphemy against Judaism, I guess English has suddenly become a second language for me, because I don't know what else it could be.
Right. Well, it's flim-flam, right? I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of this is flim-flam. It's deception. It's insulting, frankly, to have the President of the United States make such a statement. While we know, because we can see it, thankfully, due to various means, including the internet and YouTube and things like this, we can see what's going on with the Coptic population for, just to take one example, of Christian violence against Christians in these so-called Arab Spring world. We know that's not true. And so we know that his statement means nothing. It shows the depths, the utter just degradation of speech and honesty as carried out by the President of the United States and the media, in other words, for never calling him on any of this anywhere. That would encourage conservative media.
But again, you know, as somebody who follows and writes about our culture, why are we so easily flim-flammed at this point by what is clearly a bait-and-switch rhetorical device to get us to adopt, thou shalt not speak ill of Islam, but whatever you say against Jews, Christians, or even apostates from Islam is perfectly okay? When did we lose our ability to think critically about this, Diana?
That really sounds like a marvelous cue from you to me. But, you know, I've actually just finished a book about this very subject. I've been trying to answer this question for for years. And I have a new book coming out early next year called American Betrayal. And I try to go back through our past and find out how and when we did become so susceptible to the big lie. And essentially, much of my answer does take me back as far back as the 1930s with recognition of Soviet Union, which actually was a very landmark moment in terms of pretend at an institutional level, pretending that we could have a normal diplomatic relationship with a revolutionary entity, Soviet Russia, that was dedicated to world revolution, much as Islam is today. So what we actually can look back on the 20th century as is a history of America accepting, enabling, indeed participating in a series of big lies to a point where, with the totalitarian invasion of Islam, we are just simply following patterns that we established decades ago. So this is a long time coming, and it's very difficult to climb out of it because we have been so subverted as a culture to accepting lies as truth. I mean, it really is. We are in an Orwellian reality, and it's very difficult for those of us in it to realize it because, you know, it's like the air we breathe. And so these things, unless it's one of those hot-button issues that remain fair game, whether it's Christians, Jews, etc., Israel, those are still things that we, panic buttons that can still get arise. However, in terms of reality, in terms of fact, in terms of honesty, these are beyond our ken at this point. And I think this speech should be a huge story because it is so filled with lies and is so filled with subversion in terms of pushing America to accept blasphemy laws.
Well, but, you know, again, I guess I speak from my position as a recovering congressman, and I tend to view the world in terms of equal and opposite political factions. I don't understand why the Romney campaign doesn't jump on this and make book on what is actually at risk here, which is nothing less than the First Amendment and everything that we supposedly hold dear about freedom of expression.
Yes.
And not a peep from that side of the aisle.
I think that they are, I think it's a failure of nerve and a political calculation. And, you know, personally, and I hope it works because I certainly want Mitt Romney to win this election, but I think that they are so terribly handicapped by this same atmosphere, Orwellian atmosphere, that they are simply trying to maneuver their way through it without getting beaten up, without getting hurt, so that they are the last man standing at the end of this campaign. It's a very dangerous and risky calculation, although I think they probably would tell you that they are being careful and very wise in terms of not trying to poke the beast. But these are questions that must be raised to get people excited about the difference between an Obama four more years and a Romney presidency. Namely, I mean, Mitt Romney's instincts were so good when he came out right after the attack at Cairo and indeed Benghazi in terms of establishing the markers. You do not apologize for free speech. That's who we are. And you do not breach American sovereignty. And you certainly do not kill American personnel.
Well,
but the main points were freedom of speech and American sovereignty. And that was exactly the right message, and I would like to see him take that forward because we've only seen more reason to do so, and he was actually vindicated by all the events that have happened since.
The only recommendation I can make, we're going to have to leave it there, is that you send him an advance copy of your book and sit next to him and make sure he reads every word because unfortunately...
I would do it.
All right, Diana, thanks for being with us. Appreciate you being with us on Secure Freedom Radio.
Thanks, Fred.
We'll be back right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta system, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta system to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta system by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta system from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Fred Grandy filling in for Frank Gaffney. Always glad to welcome our friend, contributor Jim Hansen, to the program. He, of course, you can read at black5.net. And former special forces army sergeant, and who would know more about what happened with SEAL Team 6 than Jim Hansen, who apparently, if I'm reading your piece in USA Today correctly, Jim, you take issue with this guy Mark Owen, who supposedly wrote this tell-all book about the takedown.
You know, Fred, I guess there's a point in time where quiet professional became kind of a joke.
Huh.
You know, I think, you know, it's a question of, can the people we entrust with the most secret, covert, classified operations be trusted not to be the ones blowing the whistle on. You know, not the one, and not blowing the whistle would be the wrong term. That would be if there was something wrong going on.
Mm-hmm.
But capitalizing on publicizing those operations. It's not kosher. It's not cricket. It's not what you're supposed to do. You know, you conduct the operations and then you go on about your business and you don't tell everybody what you just did. It's part of the ethos, and this is it's changing, and I think that's a bad thing.
Can't the same criticism be leveled against the administration for essentially portraying a lot of classified material to the people that are making Zero Dark 30, supposedly this movie that's coming out in December about the Bin Laden takedown?
Absolutely. And I was making that criticism long before this book was written and any of the rest of this came up. The administration has been horrendous as far as using the military and the operations the military conducts as part of its political propaganda for President Obama's reelection, which is, campaigner-in-chief is his real title as opposed to commander-in-chief. And
right.
I think the president can declassify anything he wants, but he shouldn't. And they have been shameless about giving access to journalists and leaking and doing a number of things that have compromised important operations. You know, they compromised the joint British-Saudi operation that captured a second underwear bomber, and in doing so, exposed the agent who did it.
Mm-hmm.
They have done any number of things that have harmed our national security in the course of attempting to make President Obama look like a serious person on national security.
So, this is not a defense, but I'm just thinking this guy that wrote this book, Mark Owen, No Easy Day, which essentially describes the mission, the SEAL Team 6 mission, is he using as his justification for writing essentially a tell-all book, well, the administration did it first?
He is. That is part of the... I don't know that he's made that statement himself. It has been made in his defense, but it doesn't matter. You know, that the fact that, you know, two wrongs don't make a right,
yeah.
And the fact that the administration and the political tools in it are doing what political tools do does not justify someone who should be held and is held to a much higher degree of trust, that being a special operator. You would expect better, and so, yes, you can make the argument. It doesn't carry a lot of weight with me.
Let me ask you something, because you've been a special operator. What does all of this say to people who are still in special forces, who count on that kind of security to protect their lives?
Yeah, it says that at this point, apparently nobody cares about it. You know, at one point, we always knew that you could not trust the administration because they are politicians.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a civilian running our military, and I agree with that 100%. No qualms about it. You know, we have to have that. That's part of the way our democracy functions. But we never trusted them completely because you knew you could be hung out to dry for, first of all, for national security reasons.
Sure.
Second of all, for political considerations. That was part of the calculation. But you always knew you could trust the guys on the team to stick together.
Well,
and now you're looking at cohesion issues if you don't know who's going to write the book. Now, if we run a good mission, who gets to write the book? Who calls their agent? Who gets the movie deal?
Yeah.
That's not what you want our guys thinking about.
But having said that, let me ask you this. When do you think security became an out-of-date concept in military operations? Because obviously you've been in the special forces business for some time. You've obviously seen some of this evolution. When do you think we began to betray ourselves in terms of our own security leaks?
You know, it has been a problem as long as there have been politicians involved in our national security, whether the leaks came from Congress, whether they came from the administration, or in some cases from whistleblowers inside the military. But recently, and I would say, you know, there were problems during the Bush administration, no question about it, where things that shouldn't have been said were said because they needed, you know, the president and the administration needed support. But the Obama team has taken it to a new level. You know, it has just felt to me and to a number of other people like the main function of military operations was support of the president, not support of national security. And I don't think that is viable. I think he did that with the surge into Afghanistan. And I think the publicizing of every drone strike, of the way they go about, you know, Obama being the decider on who gets killed and who doesn't get killed, all of that has been calculated to show him as strong on national security. And I think that's a disgrace because that's not the function of the military or national security apparatus.
So having said that, what kind of a hit do you think he takes, if any, for what happened in Libya and Cairo and now appears to be taking place in places like Tunisia and Sudan and elsewhere in the Muslim world, where all of a sudden the palpable hatred of America and the West is showing up in spades?
You know, I think he has to be held responsible for the fact that we have been led from behind. You know, America is the world's policeman. When the phone rings, you know, when the world dials 911, the phone rings at the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. All right, that's just a fact. And we kind of abdicated that responsibility when President Obama decided that he was not going to be the guy who responded to those kind of things. The rest of the world could handle it. You know, we'll let NATO handle the Libya situation, and we'll go ahead and play nice with anybody, because it's probably not a problem if Islamist groups take over in places like Yemen and the other Tunisia and other places. Like, it'll be okay. No, they're good guys. They're not really the bad Islamists. And now that is 100% biting him in the butt. Because anybody who was paying attention knew all along they weren't good guys, and our failure to support more moderate elements or to support anyone, you know, we just kind of stood on the sidelines, now is showing up in the fact that the people who truly do hate us and have our best interests, the opposite of our best interests at heart, are running things.
But that caused
death.
Even when facts intrude, as they have so decisively done, particular with the information coming out about the assault on the Libyan consulate. I mean, our own director of counterintelligence, what's his name, Martin Olson, I believe, or Matthew Olson, pardon me, directly contradicted what Ambassador Susan Rice said, what the administration is saying, and to a large degree what the president said yesterday at the UN about this video being the reason that so many Muslims decided to take up arms against the U.S. Despite of all of that, this particular administration and to some degree their confidants in the media are in agreement that if we say something, the more we say it, the truer it becomes. Is that where we are right now?
They may think so. I think, you know, reality is intruding. I don't think any sentient beings truly believe that that video is the cause of what our problems are in the Middle East. And, you know, there's been polling of folks in the United States, let alone the rest of the world, that say, you know, 70-some percent believe that the problem is not videos. The problem is the fact that Islamist ideology and us ain't compatible. So we can either acknowledge that and move forward, or, like you said, continuing saying the same thing over and over and louder and hoping no one's paying attention. I think people are paying attention. I think national security went from Obama's only area where he could claim competence to an area where his lack of competence is showing in spades.
Okay, in the time we have left, we have a little less than a minute, and apologize in advance for putting you on the spot. But is there any leader out there, whether they're running for office, thinking about running for office, previously ran for office, or sitting somewhere in the public sector, that you consider the kind of leader who can step up to the plate on these issues, tell us the truth, and say what he means and means what he says?
I would love to see John Bolton, the walrus, as Secretary of State. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, leadership is difficult among politicians. He doesn't seem to be one.
No.
I wouldn't want to call it beyond that, but if we could have him as Secretary of State, I think it would be quite interesting to do some actual diplomacy.
Well, hopefully somebody in the Romney campaign is paying close attention to this program, because I concur with you totally on this. Jim, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you again.
You got it, Fred. Thanks.
And that's going to do it for Secure Freedom Radio this week. This is Fred Grandy filling in for Frank Gaffney. Until tomorrow, stay involved, stay in touch, and stay safe.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.